Welcome to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Kupke. From handguns to rifles and hunting to self-defense, even a bit of politics. It's time to exercise your First and Second Amendment rights. Call and join the conversation, 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Dick Kupke.
Well, good morning and welcome back to Trigger Talk on this gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous, but very cold January 23rd morning. It is very deceiving out there. It looks like, oh man, the sun is so shiny, but it's 20 degrees. It was like 16 or 15 when I got up. So let's see. We have got lots to talk about today. There's all sorts of follow-up and stuff like that. We've got, we've got no Michigan gun shows. Apparently everybody's still beholden. Although, you know, Whitmer said that they can open up restaurants to 25% in simply a week, you know, not right now, but in a week, yeah, maybe. And then, so maybe we'll get some gun shows back. So none in Michigan. There's three or four in Ohio, the Cambridge Gun Show, the Westland Mall Gun Show, the Hillard Special Ops Gun Show, and the Akron Area Gun Show. Missouri's got one, the RK St. Robert Gun Show in St. Robert, Missouri. But New York has canceled all their gun shows through March. Oh, gosh, they're really, you know, probably a mandate by Cuomo. But at any rate, let's see. We're still holding at 703,390. And it'll be probably 2 weeks before we get new numbers on that. So that's for CPLs and down to 13,615 pending. And I did turn in my CPL renewal on Tuesday morning, got, you know, responses back, receipts back, and all that kind of stuff. So I can't wait to see how long it physically takes it to show up in the mail. Although the mail's kind of running slow these days too. So I mean, people are talking things taking 2-3 weeks sometimes to get where you need them to go. Gosh, I was talking to Derek just a little bit ago, and we were talking about an event that happened this week that has impact on all of us, right, Derek?
Yeah, baseball Hall of Famer Hank Aaron passed away yesterday at the age of 86.
Yeah, I mean, who cannot? And by the way, that brought up another thing. I was going, I still remember seeing that. I remember seeing it when it happened, and it was such a big deal. And I'm thinking, well, Derek, do you remember? And then we talked. Derek wasn't even born yet, were you, Derek?
No, when Hank... When Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's all-time home run record, that was in 1974, and I wasn't born until 1981. So, unfortunately, I was not able to witness it live.
Well, I think probably the majority of listeners to my show, at least, probably remember it. But you still consider him one of the greats, don't you?
Yeah, I still consider him to be the all-time home run leader in Major League Baseball history, not the current home run leader Barry Bonds, because Bonds, as we all know, even though he was never convicted, he habitually cheated toward the end of his career. He got so much bigger than he was earlier in his career, and he could not have done that without the use of steroids. So that's why I consider Aaron still to be the all-time home run king.
Yeah, plus, I mean, what a nice life, and what a still was active and I want to say a community leader as well.
Yeah, he certainly was such a gracious baseball player, devoting his time to helping those in the community to help overcome racism, because Hank Aaron, as a black man, he had overcome a lot of racism growing up in Alabama when he was younger. And he received death threats, too. I watched the Major League Baseball Network tribute to Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron had received so many death threats when he was approaching Babe Ruth's all-time home run record.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks for the input today, and I think we all thought the same thing when we saw it. You know, that's such a difference. You think about the news you get when somebody passes away, and you think, oh man, what a great man. I remember that. And then the other one I think about, I just read this morning, Larry King passed away. And I thought, is he still alive? Gosh, he looks like he's been dead for 20 years. It looks like he's a marionette. You know, I look for those little lines next to his mouth where the marionette strings make his mouth go. So, what a difference between people. Let's see. We have got some follow-up here. I want to ask, and if he's listening, you can call in, Bruce from Plymouth. You called in last week, and we were talking about slide removal on a SIG P380, but in reality, I think you're referring to a SIG P238, which is the 380 version of the SIG P series. It looks kind of like a mini 1911, and it's not a polymer-based gun, and it's a pretty neat gun. And so I believe that you were struggling with getting the slide off. So why don't you call in and confirm that it is indeed a P320 or 238, and then we'll jump into that when you get on the phone, okay? Speaking of guns that I want to say, there's been a interesting change in the gun habits of people. And I want to say, of course, there's a lot of new buying of guns. And there were, 8.1 million first-time gun owners that have purchased guns since March of last year, and 20-plus million new gun purchases and things like that. And you got to look at, and by the way, that leads to other things like ammo shortages and stuff like that. We'll talk about that in a bit. But one of the things that was interesting, and I found a story on it, and then I just happened to pick up and I didn't remember it, but American Rifleman from this month, and it's called The Rise of the 9mm 1911. And I'm thinking, you know, it is interesting that and to a lot of people, a 1911 is always going to be a 45 ACP. And I've got 1911s. I've got a new one, and I've got an old one. Okay, and among other guns. And the thing is that the old one is actually an original 1911 from 1918, and I mean an original, not an A1. It's a 1911, and it is really cool, and I'm very proud of that. And I shoot it periodically just because it's fun to shoot, and it's, you know, 103 years old now and stuff like that. So, but then I've got a pretty new Sig Sauer that is one of their, you know, because there's so many people that make them. But one of the things that is really happening, and you got to kind of look at it, and I think people first dismissed this. They thought, oh geez, why are people buying 1911s in 9mm? What, you know, gosh, that's a sissy round. Well, now wait a minute. We've pretty much killed this whole 45 versus 9mm controversy over the last couple of years, because that used to be bar fight material. You know, 9mm are the best. No, 45s are the best. No, you got to have a defensive round that starts with a 4, all that kind of stuff. Well, especially when we take a look at our ballistic test that we've done with Tom from Northfield Township, and we've got them all posted on our website. And actually, I was on my website, and I was referencing it this week to a friend of mine who sent me a text. He said, we did it. We bought, and he bought a Smith & Wesson M&P 380 EZ, okay, which is a fine gun. And 380s have excellent, ballistics and terminal properties now, terminal ballistic properties. And I want to say, it's funny because this text said, we did it. I feel so American, which made me laugh. And I said, well, what did you get? What are you shooting out of it? He sent back and he goes, yeah, we got a box of the Speer Gold Dots. And I said, well, that's an excellent choice. I said, take a look at my ballistic tests on the on the website, and I sent him the link and stuff, and he goes, oh, yeah, it looks like it did okay, but it was the only box they had, so he had to take what they had. But the thing is that there are so many people that are getting guns in what we used to call subcalibers, but they are very, very useful now. And the 1911 is, it used to be kind of a, people would say, oh, you've got a 1911 conversion, being a conversion from 45 ACP to 9mm. Well, no, nowadays they're designed and they're built to be 9mm. And when you read about it, one of the things that you've got to think is why is it that suddenly the 9mm are getting really popular in the 1911? And I guess part of it is generational. You have to think about it. Most of us, I say us being, quote, the silent generation and the baby boomers, that would be people that are, let's see, the end of the baby boomers is like 60 now, is that right? 60, something like that. And then up to about 70 something. And then the silent generation is the generation beyond that, that still is very, you know, they're very adamant in their choices of guns, but in shooting and stuff. And a lot of people grew up with a 45. Well, that's just what it, you know, it started out kind of being a, I want to say, oh, that's a old, you know, military gun. Yeah, that's a pistol. That's almost like, that'd be like you or I looking back at a 45 Colt or something, a 44 Special or something like that. And, okay. Derek just told me baby boomers were born between 46 and 64. So that would be, yeah, 61 years old, I guess. So at any rate, and up to 77, is it? Yeah, 74. Anyway, the thing is that, you know, a lot of times people looked at them as older guns, the 45s, and then they became the thing, okay? All the IPSC and USPCA competitions and things like that, and people started using them, FBI rescue teams and SWAT teams and stuff like that. And so a lot of people started getting really into the 45 ACPs and the 1911s. And boy, it was a big deal. And then along comes a generation now that has grown up since the early 80s, let's say, on the 1911s. Now, there's always been, the 9mm. There's always been things like like a high power in 45 or something like that. But that's when we started seeing the Beretta 92s and then the Glock 17s and things. They really started becoming popular. We've got a call from Tom from Detroit with a question about a 1911. Hi, Tom. How are you today?
Hi. Yeah, you were talking about you got an old 1911, the 1918 year. Mm-hmm. And I was curious, how is that for accuracy?
I have found it to be extremely accurate. It it is. I can shoot the center out of a you know, regular size target just like I can with anything else. It's not like, you know, the old thing where people used to say, "Oh, you can't hit the side of a barn with a 45." You know, 1911. No, I found it to be quite accurate. It's tight. I'm not sure that it's been a civilian gun all of its life. It does say, you know, property U.S. government and things like that on it. But I want to say it's actually been, it's got a shiny finish on it, a nice blued finish on it, as opposed to the old Parkerizing. So it may have been a civilian gun, and I want to say it doesn't appear to be shot out, if you know what I mean, by being loose and stuff. So I'm pretty pleased with it.
So yeah, I was always curious if those older, you know, those older 1911s, you know, I had heard the same thing that, you know, maybe they were pretty much shot out, or if they even came off the line being accurate. That's basically your service sidearm. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say, people would say if you picked up a service grade 1911, you could wiggle it, and you'd hear it, you know, rattling, because the tolerances were looser than so many of these new ones that they're making nowadays.
Okay, but the one you got, that you're saying the tolerances are tighter. I guess for combat, they just want to make sure it functioned first and then go for accuracy second.
Yeah, you're looking at, you know, 1 minute of bad guy on a old service gun, right? You're not trying to shoot the center out of a target at 50 feet. You're trying to hit something 6 feet tall. And so I guess having a little looser tolerances for dirt and mud and stuff like that probably made sense. This one feels pretty good, and I really enjoy it. And I like the fact that it's 100 years old, taking it out and shooting it too.
No doubt. Do you think that that 45 ACP is more inherently accurate as a round than the 9mm? Or,
you know, I would say that probably one of the things that I notice most about the difference between the two, and they tend to be, I think both of them have the same. Matter of fact, almost any pistol will be as accurate as the shooter is. You know what I mean? It's the technique and how the shooter shoots as opposed to the pistol. If you put a 9mm or a 45 1911 in a ransom rest, you know what a ransom rest is, right?
I'm not familiar with the term, but I've probably seen them.
Okay, a ransom rest is one of those, it sits on a bench and it tightens down the gun, and so that it's absolutely repeatable. And then when you pull the trigger, you pull it with a little lever. And so it doesn't induce any sideways movement or up or down movement that you can with the, when you're holding a gun. And they will just put one hole in, you know, one bullet through the same hole, one after another. So they both are capable of being very accurate. I would say the big difference that I see between the two, and I, you know, this, now we're almost starting up the bar fight thing here, Tom, is that it's like, how quickly can you come back on target? Because, and it's the amount of recoil and the type of recoil that you feel. The 45, I always think of it as, you can't see me, but I'm like expressing my hands forward and oomph. It's a push. It's not a sharp crack like a high pressure round, like a 9mm. So it affects the recoil and stuff like that. That's what I see as the difference between the two.
Yeah. I've noticed that sharp recoil on the 9mm. That, you know, even the 380 seems to, you know, the real small 380, LCP, that's got a pretty sharp little kick to it.
It does, especially because it's a high-pressure round, and an LCP is a very lightweight gun. So now you're getting to what I was going to say here about the 1911s. This is one of the reasons people are enjoying shooting 9mm 1911s, and it's because a 1911 is a big, heavy gun. It has a lot of mass to it, much heavier than a Glock 17 or a Glock 19. And so you take that 1911 and shoot it, and it's all of a sudden it's like, oh, what a powder puff, because the 9mm normally has a lot of recoil and a snap to it, but the mass of that 1911 soaks it right up. And that's what we're coming to here, is that people really enjoy the 9mm round, they're very comfortable with the performance of it, both from a accuracy and from a self-defense standpoint. But when you put it in a 1911 frame, all of a sudden, it's a pussycat. So that's it. You hit it on the nail on the head, Tom.
Now, what about on a lot of those 1911s? I see a lot of them that are really tricked out, all kind of custom, accuratized, and things like that. Have you ever had much experience with those? Are they? Do you think they're worth the candle?
Well, I want to say, of course, guns are a private thing in that when it comes to stuff like that. I mean, there's guns that you just go out and shoot. They're a tool, like a Glock 17 or a Glock 19 or something. But when it comes to these 1911s that people get that are really tricked up, and we're talking like the Les Brown ones and the Wilson Combat ones that people pay $3,000-$4,000 for and more, you actually do get a wonderful trigger pull, a beautiful reset. You get a silky smooth slide and tolerances that are super, super tight and stuff like that. And it's just like, you can drive to work in a Ford Taurus, or you can drive to work in a Lamborghini. You know what I mean? It's, so I go for the ones that are kind of like a mid-range. I want to say my Sig Sauer it's called a GSR, and it has a match barrel. It's very nicely made. It's got very good machined parts, not the metal injection molded MIM parts and things like that. And so, but it's only like a $1,300 gun. Okay. I want to say you can get, there's a ton of 1911s out there for $399, $499, $599. You can get the ones like the Ruger makes an outstanding one. Remington makes an R1 that's really good. And they're in the lower price value ones, but they're very, very good. They're probably as good or better than they ever were back in the old days. I'll tell you what, and I see John from Danville's on the phone, Tom. John is one of my friends that actually his wife went out and got a 9mm 1911, and I think they love it. So do you have any more questions, Tom, before you go?
Yeah, I was. What about when they put the match grade bushing in the front of the 1911? Does that make a lot of difference, do you think?
Well, any time that you tighten up the, I want to say, on a lot of guns these days, especially some of the striker fired ones that you don't take a bushing out when you take the slide off, that front area where the barrel goes through, like on my Beretta 92FS, it's almost an oval shape. And so when you have a match grade bushing on the front and stuff, you, and on a 1911, you put it in and turn it sideways, you are tightening up where that barrel's going to go in relationship to the front sight. So yeah, they are an improvement in accuracy.
I guess you'd have to have a match barrel though, along with that bushing to kind of be, machined.
Say it has to be matched to the bushing diameter. A match barrel is actually more related to the rifling and chambers and stuff, but you would match it to the bushing. You know,
okay,
what?
I'm so going to have to get different size bushings then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, very good, Tom. Hey, John, I'm going to tell you that we are about 30 seconds or so from a break. Can you hold on? Let's see. Derek, is John still there? Yeah, okay. John, I'm going to ask you to hold on through the break. We're going to have to take a break here. What a great discussion. This is only my first topic of the day, too. So I've got 38 more pages worth of stuff, but we're not going to get to them, I can tell. We're going to have 1911 and 9mm discussions probably almost all day. So, John, you hold on and through the break, and we'll get to you. I want to say the 9mm, there's a ton of them out there, and everybody's making them. The Les Bauer ones, the Springfield, Colt, Kimber, everybody's making them. And I'm looking at the timing. Yep, we're down. This is Dick Koepke at Trigger Talk Radio here at Wham Talk 1600. We'll be back in just a few minutes with further 1911 discussions.
Wham Talk 1600. Welcome back to Trigger Talk Radio with your host, Dick Koepke. Call now, 734-822-1600 to join in the conversation.
And we're back, and we are talking 1911s in general and 9mm 1911s. We've got John from Danville on the phone. Hi, John. How are you today?
How you doing, Dick?
Fine. Thank you for holding through the break.
No problem. So we actually have a couple, three 1911s, 9mm. They are a lot of fun.
I didn't know you had three. I knew you had one or two, but three now? Which ones do you have?
Well, we have two Springfield Armory range officers in 9mm. That's really a good value for a 1911 9mm. Then we got one range officer elite, which is a higher dollar one, you know.
So what do the range officers go for?
They're in the seven neighborhood, like 699, okay. 750, that kind of thing. They have a Bomar sight at the very rear of the slide that's flat faced with the very back of the slide. So you got a real nice sight picture. It's like a target gun.
Yeah. And am I right in your feeling of it when you shoot a 9mm or a 1911, it just kind of soaks up that recoil?
Oh yeah, yeah. The gun is really overbuilt for a 9mm. Yeah, so it's really really a lot of fun to shoot, and it's a good gun to give to people that want to start learning to shoot because it's it tends to be very accurate and very easy on people. You know.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of I have that one Smith and Wesson. Let's see, is it a 4506 or 45? It's a solid stainless steel 9mm, and it weighs a ton, and it has that same. And especially, I gotta say, that one's got a double stack mag. Now, do your 1911 9mm have double stacks or single stacks?
No, they're single stack. I think they're a 9-shot mag. It's a proprietary mag, you know, for that cartridge. A little bit different than a Wilson Combat, for example.
Yeah. Wilson Combat typical mag is just the same for. I mean, they work in that. I can use one of the mags from my 1918 model 111 or 1911 in a modern one because they're all the same.
Sure.
So we had Tom from Detroit asking about accuracy. I have found them to be very accurate. You as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they are. And they gobble up whatever you got. If you have some old steel Russian 9mm like Tool or Bear or whatever, there's no problem with them at all. I actually have a ransom rest at home, and before the problem hit with the ammo shortage, I was getting ready to work up some 9mm loads and using a range officer to do that with in a ransom rest.
Yeah.
Haven't got around to it yet.
You know, the whole ammo thing is amazing. I was going to talk about that a bit today. I don't know. Matter of fact, I'm going to make a run out after I'm done with the show down to Johnson Sporting Goods in Adrian to see if they've got some powder that I need. But it is amazing that not only, well, actually, I'm amazed at what people are paying for ammo, okay? When I go to ammobuy.com and I look at people paying, ungodly amounts, and I want to say, what did I just see? A box of 357 Magnum for $146 or something like that. It's like, oh, my God.
Really?
So that's one of the reasons I'm... Now, I fortunately have a ton of reloading supplies, although I just don't happen to have the powder that I want to have for this one rifle that I want to load for. Yeah. And but actually, you could use that stuff as bartering. I mean, a brick of primers these days is worth a ton.
Yeah, I bought a lot of primers right before all this happened, mostly small rifle. So I'm looking for the other three, you know, but anyway. That's what
I need to get some. Although this is something too, you always follow what the recipes say, but you can have some substitutions. They say, they being kind of a ubiquitous term, I'm loading for 7mm Remington mag, and it says to use Magnum large rifle primers, but there's a lot of people out there who say, well, actually you could use, you know, certain regular large rifle primers that are just as hot. And so I actually looked up a video that was showing tests of different primers, Magnum versus standard in all the sizes and stuff. And there's a lot of crossover. You know, some of them are kind of light as far as their amount of force. And then others that the Magnum is not as forceful as another brand's standard. You know what I mean?
Oh, so, really? Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, which is why they always tell you you should use what the recipe says and then start low and work your way up. Because if you're using it says actually a Magnum primer can be the equivalent of about 3 to 5 more grains of powder versus a standard one. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you'd agree, you know, when you start doing stuff like that, it's maybe not for the first day reloader, you know, so.
No, you should start with the recipe, start at a starting load and work your way up. And actually, you may never go beyond midpoint because you might find your guns are most accurate with the middle charge, so. Yeah.
That's what I always found. I had an M1A that I loaded for a while. It seemed like if you backed away from max a little bit, it did better.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. It seems, when you push it to the limit, there's a reason that it's the limit. And typically somewhere between midpoint, well, I want to say actually midpoint or below, you'll find that the most accurate load. And, you know, really that last 30 feet per second really doesn't make that much difference. So.
No, it's just like I got that ransom rest. I was going to start with the 9mm 1911s and use a chronograph and, you know, work my way up with some of that stuff. And that's one of the reasons where the all steel gun is handy, you know? So,
yeah.
More forgiving.
Well, I got to recall, didn't your wife buy the first 9mm 1911?
Well, I bought it for her, but yeah, she had that one. We went and took a class at, in Ohio, Tactical Defense Institute. And we had thought that we were going to shoot it with 1911s, and then they encouraged us to shoot a more standard defensive pistol like a Glock or a Smith & Wesson M&P, so we went with that. But so she had that, and another 9mm range officer got traded in where I buy guns, and then another 9mm range officer elite that's got like Novak sights and some fancy stuff on it, that got traded in, so yeah, we have those, and they are a lot of fun to shoot, which if you got like real crappy ammo, they're just great, you know. They smack the primer real hard with the hammer, you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, John, thank you for calling in today. As always, I appreciate you listening and calling in. So have a good day.
Sure. Yeah, you too, Dick. Bye now.
Yep. Yeah, bye. Gosh, John has been a friend for many, many years, and I want to say from the very first time, when was it? Probably 1968 that I met him, and we've been friends since then. So let's see. So here we are, and the Springfield Armory, they also make one called a Ronin, which is one of their fancier ones. I want to say one of the things about the differences between the old 1911s. Tom from Detroit asked about, you know, how I like the accuracy. Is it okay? Yes, it's accuracy. It's accurate, but it absolutely is a far inferior gun to the later models. The sights are not as good. The trigger is not as good. The shape of the actual grips and stuff are not as good because they don't have the little scallop that allows your finger to be on the trigger easily. Also, it doesn't have the big beaver tails that are common today. And the big beaver tail is what keeps the web of your thumb from getting a stork bite right there. So yeah, there is a reason to go with the new ones. And I do really trust John too when he talks about the Springfield Armory range officer ones being a good value. I recall that. So let me just say, since we haven't heard back from Bruce, that Bruce, if you are listening and can't call in, what I would like to say is you were talking about getting the slide off, and the slide is no different than any other 1911 style gun. And that is, first of all, of course, you unload the gun. So you take the mag out and you rack the slide to make sure that there's nothing present in there. But then what you do is you go ahead and move the slide back. And what you'll find is that there are two little scallops on the left-hand side of the slide. There's a small one that's a little semicircle, and then a larger one that is what the slide release catches on. You don't want to go all the way back to the larger one. You go back just until that slide release button, okay, lines up with that small half circle. And then on the right side of the gun, there's a little button that you push in that's actually the pin from the slide release. And you push it out, and that little half circle there gives relief for the slide lock, and it pops right out, and then the slide comes off the front of the gun. So very simple to do, and I'm hoping that helps you. I told you last week, just listen this week and we would talk about it. Let's see. What was I going to talk about here? Oh, on the way back, I was talking with John. The discussion kind of got into ammo and supplies and stuff like that. And I was up in Lennon, Michigan yesterday. One of the things I do is I'm involved with the township that I live in. I'm the chairman of the planning commission, and we're talking with a company that is doing a solar project. And so we went up to look at one of their solar projects in Lennon, Michigan, which is up by Owosso. And it's a big one, but I looked at two reasons. I'm glad to go, and it was a very good tour to look at the solar energy farm and how those look and are built and things like that. But on the way back, I went right past Steiner Tractor, which is an antique tractor part place. But also then I stopped off in Fenton at Guns Galore. And I was able to pick up some projectiles that I needed. They had quite a bit of supplies, but you have to know what you want, and you have to be able to be willing to compromise. And so, like, for example, I was looking for a certain projectile, which they did not have, but they did have a Sierra Game King in the same it's a 150 grain Spitzer Point boat tail. And so, and it's a well-respected round. So I was able to pick that up and be satisfied with that for the project that I'm working on. So I want to say like Guns Galore, and that's why I'm going to go down to Johnson's and Adrian after the show. Some of the smaller places still have supplies. And what happens is that these big ones, I mean, the Midway USA, Brownells, Cabela's, Bass Pro Shop. They're all sold out of everything, and that's because they have such a big online presence and stuff. Do not forget your local gun store, Shooter Services on Middle Belt, Van Born. What's that one called? It's on Van Born and Taylor. The little places like that still a lot of times have what you're looking for. So I'm just suggesting check out your local gun stores. So let's see here. We're talking about, I'm trying to avoid politics here. This was a funny story. Thieves used a car to break into an Indiana gun store. And it was actually the second time this store had been broken into. But this time, and they had beefed up doors and stuff like that. These guys stole a car and they just went right through the cinder block wall. And they apparently must have figured where the inner walls was. They must have done some scoping out ahead of time so that they check their video, they may find out who it was. But they actually, some of these, you know, stores are smaller in strip malls and things like that, and boom, right through the cinder block wall and went in. They actually left the car, too. They must have had a backup driver. But amazing what they what people have been doing to get a hold of guns here. Speaking of guns and stores and things like that, out in Kansas City, there's a new gun club that's exclusively for women. And it's actually associated with a range and a store, but they formed a women's only gun club. It's called Pretty Pistol Posse. And it is, and this one actually happens to be women of color. And it's, let's see, Latasha Jacobs and Rashawn Garlington. And they said, we've been gun owners, but we found that they already were gun owners, but they didn't shoot regular because a lot of times that they felt intimidated and things like that. So this is kind of like with Firing Line. They have the, what is it, ladies, firearm ladies locked and loaded or something like that. But the point is that if you check at some of these clubs and some of these ranges, you'll find that there are women-only groups that meet regular, and they represent a diverse group of gun owners. They've got children. They don't have children. They're business owners. They're nail techs. They're makeup artists. They're bankers. But the one thing that they all do is they believe in their right to keep and bear arms, and especially from the self-defense standpoint. So I want to say for you ladies out there listening, check around and some of the ranges. If you check like Ann Arbor Arms, if you check the Firing Line, you check T-Rex and other places like that, those places tend to have groups that they most of them will have women instructors. If you want to learn from a woman as opposed to a man, many of them will have women-only groups and women-only nights. So that's a good thing to be able to check into. I continue to see things going on, and actually I thought I experienced it this week. I was looking up some information on firearms, and the search engine wouldn't take me to it. And I thought, uh-oh, did somebody get deplatformed, or is this censorship going on? And, you know, I want to say it really is taking place out there with companies like the Amazons and the Googles and things like that. There was a company called Arrowhead Tactical. Now, they were just a company that makes men's concealed carry apparel, but they got deplatformed by Facebook because they said it's against their policies because they are showing, firearm accessories. So very interesting out there. Let's see. Jason Vanderbrink is president of Federal CCI Speer and Remington now. And he did a video actually, and he was talking about the the ammo shortage. And you cannot go anywhere in the gun industry without people talking about, where's the ammo? Where's the ammo? Is this, you know, a conspiracy? Is this whatever? No, in reality, and I've mentioned this before for people who have asked me, is that the ammo shortage is just that you have A, so many people that are buying it, and B, so many new people that are buying it. That 8.1 million new first-time gun owners are out there buying up the 22 and the 9mm and the 45 and stuff. Some of the other, you know, now, does that make sense that you can't find ammo for a 7mm Remington mag? Well, that's kind of a pretty specific hunting round. But even that is people are buying, if they can't get what they want, they are getting something else, okay? The gun and ammo manufacturers are working full speed, okay? They reacted as best they could to the 2020 surge. They've got a lot more. This is interesting. They made a lot more hunting ammo in 2020, this is the companies that I just mentioned with Speer and Federal and stuff. They made more hunting ammo in 2020 than they made in their 99-year history of the company. So you had, and this is actually interesting because we do appear to have a resurgence in interest in hunting. And people are out hunting. They are stocking their freezers with venison and elk and other things that they, and by the way, small game hunting and waterfowl hunting and all of that has taken off as people saw, you know, I better have a way to be able to fill the freezer when the lines at the grocery store get too long. So anyway, so there you have it. They're running production at at Federal, CCI, Speer, and Remington. They're running production, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're running at full speed. And one of the things is, this is interesting, though, just so everybody knows, and this is affecting the hand loaders, which is why I'm glad I've got lots of primers and stuff like that. They said, as for primers, specifically, he goes, they are dedicated to feeding their factory ammo production before any excess is packaged and distributed to America's reloaders. So until and unless they catch up on ammunition orders, they won't have any excess primers to sell. So that's Federal and Remington right there. Well, do they also have CCI? Was that part of them? Wait a second. CCI, Federal, and Remington. Three of the very big primer manufacturers. Remington and, let's see, so Federal, CCI, and Remington. Now, that still leaves Winchester and who else has got primers? Let's see, Winchester and somebody else. And you can find sometimes some things like some Russian ones, the Tula primers. There's some from Europe called RWS. You can find some of them. But for the most part, that's the main manufacturer of primers out there. And since they're busy using all of them in production of ammunition, they're not going to have any available for us as hand loaders. So at any rate, I avoided politics for the most part. I will say the only thing I wanted to hit was that Gretchen Whitmer's diverting some COVID-19 funds into metal detectors for the Capitol building. So very interesting there, Gretchen. Apparently, you can use the funding that you do or don't have on COVID-19 to further your anti-gun efforts out there. So that's about all I'm going to get into politics today. When we get back, next week we'll talk about a lot of other things and companies moving out of places with high taxes. This is Dick Kupke at Trigger Talk. See you next week.